From the heart of the Forest City, Blackburn Media presents the Craig Needles Podcast, looking at the biggest stories in London and around the world and how they impact you. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
You know, sometimes, and I don't think I'm going to do it just because I don't know what the rules are and regulations, but I just feel like opening the podcast with the famous clip of Liz Lemon saying, "What a week," to which Jack Donaghy replies, "Lemon, it's Wednesday." Today is Friday here on the Craig Needles Podcast, but what a week. We had the remnants of whatever was going on with the trucker thing over the weekend, and we talked about that a little bit on the podcast on Tuesday. And then, almost seemingly sparked by the trucker thing, there is a Reform Act caucus vote about Erin O'Toole's leadership of the Conservative Party of Canada. And he is turfed from that position. And here's the thing. It wasn't even a close vote. I guess a lot of MPs figured the writing was on the wall and Erin O'Toole was not going to be the leader of this particular party anymore. So that's it. It was done. It was over. So now the Conservatives need a new leader. And here's what I'm wondering about. If you're someone here in London, in the three ridings that are exclusively within London, Elgin, Middlesex, London, there's a bunch of stuff outside of London. We'll talk about that in a kind of a separate category. Is that a good news story for you, what just happened? If you're trying to make the Conservative Party one that's electable within the city of London, can you have someone who has views outside of the majority of the people in the city of London on views such as, or issues rather, such as reproductive rights or LGBTQ plus issues? Can you do that? And hey, maybe the answer is yes, but I think it's highly unlikely. Highly unlikely. If conversion therapy, as per some of the reporting from CBC, if conversion therapy was the reason that Erin O'Toole doesn't have this job anymore, that is a very, very, very bad sign for the electability of the Conservative Party in Canada in places like London and places like the 905 and other places in this country where there are ridings that the Conservatives could win so long as they don't make problems for themselves. Which is exactly what they have done this time, in my opinion. So what does the future of the Conservative Party of Canada look like? And what is the future of, I guess, centrist politics in Canada look like? Because I've seen a lot of people wondering, hey, wait a minute, the Conservatives are going right. There are a lot of people who are going to be in the next election annoyed with Justin Trudeau, or whoever the next Liberal leader is, if it's not Trudeau next time. But based on the events of this week, I'm probably will be. They're annoyed with Justin Trudeau. They would never consider voting for the NDP. But they just cannot bring themselves to vote for a Conservative Party that is moving further right from the Canadian center. And I think there's going to be a lot of voters in that particular boat. And I just don't know what the Conservative Party's answer to that is. And who knows what the next year looks like for the CPC, who their leader is a year from now. But geez, this just feels like an unforced error. And I'm not someone who thought that Erin O'Toole was some sort of phenomenal candidate. I just think that if you're replacing him with someone else from the caucus, it may not necessarily be a whole lot of fun electorally for the Conservatives going forward. So let's talk about that. Let's have a conversation about that. You likely know the name Kristen Raworth. And Kristen is a political insider in Alberta. She knows the federal political scene. You may know her from Twitter and various other stories she'd been involved in. I know she was on CBC this week. So if you know Kristen, we're happy to have her here on the Craig Needles Podcast. Thank you so much for doing the podcast and talking some federal politics with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So dramatic week, nonetheless. there's no other way to describe it other than a dramatic week. So let's just go back in time about a week here. So that's a week ago today. So today's Friday, and the truck drivers are arriving in Ottawa. Did you think when this is how truck drivers and various other people, to be clear, did you think that when that started happening that, oh yeah, by the time that this is all over, Erin O'Toole's time as the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada will be over? It just seems like it's so much has happened in a 7-day span.
I think his response to the truck drivers the truck convoy is much the same as his response over the last 2 years and is why he ended up being voted out. He said one thing and then he flip-flopped and then he said another thing and he said he would meet with them, then he said he wouldn't meet with them. And I think it's just indicative of the issues with his leadership and that he really failed in the entire time that he was leader to stick with one position and defend that position. He would just basically go wherever the wind blew him, and that's how he responded to the convoy as well.
And that, I think, is a fair frustration. And I think that there are people that always sort of thought that Aaron O'Toole was going to be a one election leader for the Conservative Party of Canada if he couldn't go out and win the election. And he holds Trudeau to a minority once again. And I know that people in O'Toole circle were saying this was a win, but clearly members of the Conservative Party expected more than that.
Well, I think, you know, the issues with Aaron go back to the leadership, in that when he ran in the leadership, he ran as a quote unquote true blue conservative. And, you know, he even went so far as to critique Peter MacKay several times for being a red Tory. And then immediately after winning the leadership, he became everything that Peter MacKay was that he criticized. He ran in the general as a red Tory on moderate policies, including introducing a conservative version of the carbon tax. And so I think that people were frustrated back then in that he won the leadership as something that he clearly wasn't. And anyone who was familiar with him knew that he wasn't. And the deal I think that he made with the Conservative Party was, okay, I'm going to run us as a moderate party, and that's going to win us what we need, which is votes and seats in the GTA and in other urban areas. And we are going to expand the party's appeal by doing this. And then instead of doing that, they actually lost seats. And while they did get more votes, they lost seats. They lost a seat in Edmonton that they'd held for a very, very long time. They lost seats in other parts of the country that they've had for quite some time. And I think that was just, at that point, Conservatives were just done because the deal that he tried to make with them didn't work out.
And yeah, at some point, if you're making these deals, you're making these promises, it's got to come back with some sort of electoral victory. And people talk all the time about how Stephen Harper had this control over the Conservative caucus. And hey, how come Andrew Scheer hasn't had that? And how come Aaron O'Toole hasn't had that? I'm not downplaying Stephen Harper's abilities to control a caucus here, but it's easier to do that when you're the prime minister as opposed to being not that.
Well, I think too, I mean, from the very beginning, when the parties merged, Harper made a deal with people like, we are going to become government. And if we want to be government, this is what we have to do. And he was also, he had bench strength that didn't exist for Andrew Scheer and doesn't exist for Aaron O'Toole. If you think about the people who were in the front bench in Harper's government, even when he was in opposition, like John Baird, John Moore, Rona Ambrose, Lisa Raitt, Jim Prentice, people like that, like he had an incredibly strong front bench, and that hasn't really existed for the next two leaders.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. So one wonders, A, how do the Conservatives get out of this? And B, what does the Conservative Party of Canada look like after this? Because if it's a veer right, I think there are going to be a lot of Canadians who feel a little bit politically homeless, and there's going to be a lot of people who say, well, I'm annoyed with Justin Trudeau, but this is too far right to me, and I would never consider voting for the NDP, and it's just going to lead to a weird electoral space that we'd be in.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if I were to place my bets, I would assume that if Pierre Poilievre runs, it's Pierre Poilievre's to lose, and he will likely become the next leader of the Conservative Party if he chooses to run. I think that his brand of conservatism appeals very strongly to the base of the party, but it does not appeal beyond the base. And I don't think that you will see the party making any gains with him as leader. So I do think that they will likely veer right, especially when you have organizations like pro-life organizations that are well funded and who will definitely be heavily involved in the leadership race. I think that you will see a harder right candidate come out of that. And, you know, at some point, the party's going to have to reconcile with itself and decide what it wants to be. And moderates, you know, of which there are many in the party and current sitting MPs who identify as socially progressive and fiscally conservative, will need to decide where they want to sit and what they want to do.
Yeah, and that's the interesting part of this. And look, you know this, and most people know this, but I think it bears repeating. If the Conservative Party of Canada is not going to win a bunch of seats in the 905, a bunch of seats in suburban Vancouver, and a bunch of seats in suburban Montreal, they may as well not even try. And I just don't know how you can win seats in those places if you've got the pro-life movement that is a big part of the messaging, and if you've got anti-LGBTQ plus movement stuff that's part of the messaging. I just those two things run counter to one another. So do you want to be a party that actually may, you know, be in power again, or do you just want to be constantly in opposition? I feel like that's what the Conservatives are choosing between right now.
Well, and they often, I hear the argument made by, you know, former Harper staffers that, you know, Harper governed for almost 10 years and he was, you know, not a hardcore SoCon, but he was socially conservative. But that is forgetting that that was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And people's positions have changed and Canadians' positions have changed. And at the time that Stephen Harper became prime minister, you know, gay marriage had just come into being. But previous to that, the Liberal government didn't support gay marriage either. Like we've moved the dial a lot on these issues in the last 10, 15 years. And so the Harper model doesn't work anymore. And I think that Conservatives are having a difficult time wrapping their heads around that. And especially the SoCon pieces of the party who, you know, conscience rights or sex selective abortions, these are not issues that galvanize moderates, and they are not things that speak to the vast majority of Canadians. And when you're arguing also against gun control, that doesn't speak to the vast majority of Canadians. You're arguing against carbon pricing, that does not appeal to the vast majority of Canadians. So there really needs to be a come to Jesus moment, ironically, for this party in what they want to do, because they can be right-wing ideologues or they can win. There's no, I don't believe that those two things can happen at the same time.
No, I couldn't agree more. So again, it comes back to the question you asked earlier, is what does the Conservative Party of Canada want to be? Does it want to be a serious party that has a chance to be in power, or does it want to be constantly in opposition and letting Justin Trudeau be prime minister for as long as he's so inclined? That I feel like those are the decisions that are ahead of the party here in the next, 6 to 12 months.
Yep. And I think the other thing is, you know, I have friends who are pro-life and who are SoCons. And I think there is an ability, and maybe this is one way in which Stephen Harper's model could be looked to, where you can respect other people's opinions and you can respect, you know, pro-life opinions, but you don't have to make them policy. And I think that that's where the party is really struggling, is how do we respect these positions and bring people into the party who believe this? Because I don't believe, I'm very pro-choice, but I don't believe that pro-life people shouldn't be allowed to be engaged in politics, mm-hmm. like the Liberal Party does, because they won't allow candidates who are pro-life to run for them. And so how do you do that, but also maintain a policy that is inclusive? And I think, I don't know the answer to that necessarily. This is why I'm not the leader of the Conservative Party. But I think that that's part of the conversation, is we can't, where I think the Conservatives do get some tread is that the Liberals demonize anyone who doesn't think the way that they do, whether that's on pro-life issues or that's, you know, issues around anti-vaxxers. Like you can't do that. That's not a way to bring the country together. And that's not a way to bring people over to your side if you demonize everybody who thinks differently.
But that's kind of the Liberal playbook, because it works for them on two different levels. One, you get some of those soft red Tory voters, maybe you convince them to sort of change your mind and come over to your team. And two, if you make the Conservatives look like the boogeymen the entire time, then those soft NDP votes, you can say, hey, if you don't vote for us, well, look who's going to wind up being in power, so you'd better vote for us. So it works for them on two levels. So if you ask, though, the Liberals from an electoral perspective, hey, do you want the Conservatives to continue to do stuff like this, they will say yes every single time, because there are just so many net benefits to them when this happens.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, when you look at the images coming out of MPs meeting with the trucker convoy, I can just imagine some Liberal staffers sitting there like, you know, putting their hands together gleefully because they're building their attack ads right now and what they will look like in the next election. And, you know, this absolutely plays into the Liberal playbook 100%. And it takes away from some of the very legitimate arguments that the conservatives are making around cost of living, around inflation, around issues that are real and tangible to the majority of Canadians, but get lost when it becomes about this value conversation and this conversation about SOCONs versus non-SOCONs and all that stuff. And the conservatives fall into that trap every single time.
Yeah, no, that's very much the case. And look, I know that people are going to listen to this and say, well, Craig, you're always mean to the Liberal Party. And I think that I'm critical of them, but I think that they deserve it. And Liberal Twitter, not a big fan of me, not a big fan of yours either, from what I understand. but at the same time, like, you know, this is not us being cynical. This is just really the things that they do. Like, you know, if you don't like the fact that the Liberal Party does stuff like this, talk to them, not us, you know. But this is just very factual that this is how they sort of operate their politics.
Well, and it's always ironic to me when, you know, because Liberal Twitter is obsessed with Stephen Harper. And so you always see all these comments about Stephen Harper constantly. But the level of control that Stephen Harper had in his prime minister's office is nothing compared to the control that Trudeau has. And the way that the top-down approach that comes out of the PMO within the Liberal government. And so I think that, you know, if you can't criticize your own team, you're allowing your party to continue to fail on certain things. And Liberals are terrible at not being able to criticize their own often. And so it allows Justin Trudeau to make these sweeping promises that he doesn't actually do anything about. You know, I mean, something was going around on Twitter the other day about how in 2015, he promised that in 5 years, there would be no more boil water advisories on First Nations communities. Mm-hmm. And it's 2022, and there are still over 30 communities that can't drink their own water. So, you know, first past the post. This is the last election from first past the post. What happened to that? Like, there are so many promises that he has made that he has done nothing about. And instead of calling the government to account, we spend so much of our time obsessing over the Conservative Party and you know, little things that their MPs have done that we don't spend enough time actually addressing what our current government isn't doing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, because that's what the opposition is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about holding the government to account on key issues and explaining to Canadians, hey, here's where they've let us down. And then the hope, obviously, from that is that the government does better because the opposition is there. Which, that's how it should go. But if the opposition is too busy sort of beating each other's brains out, then Canadians don't really get to see some of that. And I kind of feel like that's the spot we've fallen into here, whereas the Conservative Party has sort of turned the cameras in on themselves at this point. And I don't think that's good for the Canadian democracy in itself.
No, and I mean, I see all these comments, especially after Aaron was voted out, where people are, you know, excited and happy about it, like Liberal Twitter and some other people, but We need a strong opposition. Like, that is an important and integral part to our democracy, is to have a strong and effective official opposition. And I don't understand why you would be celebrating the fact that we do not have that. It's important, and it is valid. And the questions, again, that the Conservatives are asking in the House around inflation and cost of living are important questions that need to get addressed. Like, we are living in a world right now, and you can make arguments about whether or not the Liberal government did what they had to do because of the pandemic or whatever. But when groceries are things that people can't afford, when you can't afford to buy a home, when gas is prohibitively expensive, these are important issues that we need to be talking about. And when you watch Question Period, the Liberals' response is, you know, to basically talk about how we're doing better than most G7 countries. But that doesn't matter to Joe Blow in a small town who can't afford to buy groceries for his family. And we're not having that discussion because we're too focused on the dramatics of the Conservative Party to talk about those things that actually matter.
So I think that's really that's a very good point. I'll ask you this then. If you were advising the Conservative Party right now, are you advising someone who wants to be the next leader of the Conservative Party? What would you be saying? What would you be telling them? Hey, maybe this is what we should be doing.
I think what I would hope for is that they would move away from these social issues and move away from the focus on things like abortion and LGBTQ rights and move on to, you know, where they're strong, which is these conversations on fiscal accountability. And, you know, I would hope that when they do have their leadership, that they consider appealing beyond the base. I don't think that that's going to happen, but that would be nice. But I think the basic thing is to continue to hammer this inflation piece and the parts around cost of living, and to keep talking about that and bringing that up. But also just to go into the communities and have those conversations, and don't get wrapped up in things like the trucker convoy or all of these different things that are so galvanizing for folks, and stop getting wrapped up in anti-vax conversations, because that takes away from your broader point, which is a strong one around the economy.
Yeah. And I think that's what they should do too. And I think that there's space for that from as far as how Canadians believe things. But the last thing I'll ask Kristen before we go here is the segment, the splinter of the Canadian right, when you talk about the PPC, that didn't draw a lot of votes from the Conservatives. But are they so afraid of the PPC that they're going to send themselves right and therefore make themselves unelectable? This is what I wonder about.
Well, when you look at the vote split in Alberta, for example, the PPC did hurt the Conservative vote in Alberta. In places like Edmonton Centre, which you wouldn't have actually expected there to be a stronger PPC vote. If you put the PPC vote next to the CPC vote, James Cumming would have beat Randy Bosno. So they are afraid of that. And they are afraid of that vote splitting on the right. It's the same thing that's happening in Alberta politics as well. That fear of division on the right flank of your party. So I can understand why there is this need and desire to try to bring those people back into the fold. But I personally believe that if the Conservative Party became more moderate and moved more to the center, like a Brian Mulroney government did, you know, and Brian Mulroney had two back-to-back majority governments, one of the only Canadian prime ministers to ever do that. You know, same thing with, you know, Jean Chrétien. When you talk about liberal politics, Jean Chrétien was a centrist. He was not the Liberal Party of Justin Trudeau. He was a centrist. And I think centrists, you know, as much as we get maligned on the internet a lot of the time, they do better. And they appeal to a broad group of Canadians. And I think that the Conservative Party would do well to follow that model.
Canadians like compromise and consensus. They do.
They do.
I think their understanding of, okay, I'm not going to get my way on everything all the time, but let's try to work together. Canadians like the idea of politicians doing that.
Well, and there's a reason why people always joke that Paul Martin was the best finance minister the Conservative Party never had. Like he was a conservative in a lot of ways. You know, a lot of these folks had very strong centrist, you know, moderate views. And I think that the Conservative Party would do well to look back on that model. Personally, I think that would be much more effective than to try to get what 10% of the population back into the fold and try to get the other group who've abandoned them since 2015.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We'll leave it there, because I've taken up enough of your time, Kristen. Thank you so much for weighing in, giving some thoughts on this crazy week. So glad I could catch up with you for a few minutes. We could talk about that.
Thank you for having me.
Kristen Raworth here on the Craig Needles podcast, talking about federal politics with us. And yeah, it's been a bit of a week. I want to talk about one more thing, though, before we wrap up. Just a quick local thing. You may have seen a Twitter exchange that I had with a local business. And I'm not going to name the business, but they posted on Instagram a story or a grid post, if you want to call it that, about how they are not going to be worrying about checking vaccination passports or mask wearing and all this stuff. And they posted this, and perhaps unsurprisingly, and this is what I was getting at on Twitter, there was a reaction from the Middlesex London Health Unit. And the folks over at the health unit said, hey, you know what? This was probably not something you should be doing. You've got to follow public health guidelines, so keep that in mind. And they decide they're going to close their eat-in aspect of the business because of this, which they can do if they want. I don't care. But I saw the exchange and posted it on Twitter and just said, hey, listen, if you're going to publicly declare that you're not going to follow the guidelines that have been set out by public health officials, you might be getting some phone calls. To me, this is no different than saying, oh yeah, we're not going to refrigerate our chicken if it's raw. Just going to serve it up. Who cares if it turns? This is no different from saying, oh yeah, we're taking all the soap out of the kitchen. No one's washing their hands before they prep meals at this restaurant. If you had publicly said any of those things, health inspectors would have come by and said, hey, what's going on here? Because that is their job. They have to make sure that restaurants are up to a certain standard, and I'm glad they have such a job. And right now, part of that standard includes checking for vaccination, and it includes masking. Now, if you want to complain that checking for vaccination here in the age of Omicron may be a tactic that doesn't necessarily need to occur because Omicron moves pretty well whether folks are vaccinated or not, we can have that conversation, sure. But for now, if you're a business and you do not check for vaccination, you are violating public health guidelines. And for the most part, if you just do that, if someone comes in and says, hey, I want to eat in your restaurant, but I don't have a vaccine certificate, and you just let them do it, for the most part, like it or not, restaurants can get away with that. It is when you publicly announce that you are doing such things that the trouble begins. That's when the problems occur. And that's what happened here with this restaurant that we are not going to name here on the podcast. So it's essentially a self-made problem if the health unit calls you up and says, hey, we're not going to actually be okay with this. I think actually it makes the job easier for the restaurant inspectors, the health inspector, for these businesses that are just flagrantly announcing their violations. You used to actually have to go do inspections to find out, hey, what's going on in the kitchen? And hey, are you up to code on this, this, or this? And now, they just publicly tell you. Sure takes some of the guesswork out of it, doesn't it? So I bring this up for one reason. I know that it's hard for local businesses right now, and local restaurants especially, and it sucks. And if this has been a difficult thing for businesses to go through, or business owners, people who work at these places, I could not be more sympathetic. I swear to you on my life, that's true. This sucks. The only reason I made the point of posting that Instagram post on my Twitter feed was that if you publicly announce that you're going to violate guidelines that are in there by law from the province of Ontario, don't email me and say this is Justin Trudeau's fault. Don't email me and talk about the truckers. This is all provincial stuff. If you're going to say that, oh yeah, we're going to violate this, you can probably expect a phone call or someone to knock on the door and say, no, we don't think you should do that. Because we have public health guidelines in this province for a reason. And I'm not just talking about COVID stuff. There's a bunch of other stuff too that is a good reason to have public health guidelines. So if you're going to tell people we're violating this, well, there's going to be some pushback. There's going to be some blowback to that. So don't get mad at me when I point out the foolishness of your plan on Twitter. So I know it's been hard for local businesses. I'm not trying to be hard on people who own local restaurants. I support people who own local restaurants. I try to get takeout on a pretty regular basis or order food or whatever it happens to be. I'm not going to name the places I do that from. You know who you are if I go to your place and talk to you about it. But, geez, it's not me making it hard on you when you essentially put a big red light on your restaurant and say, hey, health inspector, come check out what's going on here. That's not my fault that they found out. Don't blame me for that. Don't blame anyone else who happens to mention it either. You're the one that put this on your own social media page, so perhaps you should be the one that has to understand and navigate the consequences. So to local restaurant owners, the ones who are doing the best they can to get through this, I am cheering for nothing but the best for you. Nothing but the best. And hey, a few weeks from now, you're going to be able to open up a little more. A few weeks after that, open up a little more. We're kind of getting out of the Omicron aspect of this here. And all the experts would tell you that we may have surpassed the hospital peak here, which is good. What we've been waiting to do. So you're going to continue to get good news, I hope. And maybe we're going to be past the point where there has to be lockdowns or changes or things along those lines. I hope. So continue to do your best to help keep yourself safe, your staff safe, customers safe. I really hope that's what you continue to do, those of you who have been doing those things. And even the people at the restaurants that don't like masking rules and don't like vaccination rules, like, I get it. No one likes it. No one's happy about it. But you kind of got to abide by it, at least for now. Otherwise, you're going to be in violation of the rules, and health inspectors have the authority to shut you down if you're violating public health rules. This is not new. This is not something that was invented during COVID. That's all we need to say about that. We'll wrap up the Craig Needles podcast here. Thank you for listening this week. I hope you have an excellent weekend if you're listening to us here on the Friday, the day it comes out. If you're listening to us later on, we'll be back with more content on Tuesday. Hopefully something not related to Conservative Party of Canada drama, but you never know how the weekend's going to go and what things could happen. We'll talk to you next week.
The Craig Needles podcast is a presentation of Blackburn Media.